at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Underground Grad School. Classes that begin in March include Introduction to Music Theory, A Moment of Possibility, Finding Opportunity in Our Differences, Financial Freedom, Getting Empowered About Money in Your Life, and more. Portland Underground Grad School is also known as PUGS. Classes take place all over Portland metro area. Information about registering, teaching classes, and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class, the only program of its type in Oregon or Southwest Washington. I'm Jamie Partridge, and I'm here with my co-host, Amanda Hill. Hello, Amanda.
Good evening, Jamie.
Hello, hello. And tonight we're talking about teachers and social justice unionism. Our guests are Stephen Siegel of the Reynolds Education Association Social Justice Caucus. Good evening, Stephen.
Great to be here, Jamie.
And Jung Nam from the Portland Association of Teachers Social Justice Committee.
Thanks for having us.
Hi, Jung, you bet. So let's start off by talking about the major issues facing teachers at this time. Describe the, one of you, either one, kick it off. Describe the corporate education reform agenda.
I can go ahead and start with that. So when I talk about it, or when I think about it, I basically think about three things that are sort of raining down on schools, so to speak. One is tax cuts and austerity measures. So that's a big part of what schools are dealing with. Schools are underfunded, they're under-resourced, and more of the money that could be going to schools is instead going to corporations through their tax breaks and the wealthy. Number two, we have these invalid, biased tests. Some would call them racist, certainly classist. They are designed to fail students. They come up
with...
This
is the standardized testing that we hear
yes,
about.
Yes, right. The high-stakes standardized tests. What all the findings show are that students struggle and fail based mostly on their socioeconomic status. It's not a good test. And then number three, there's this narrative from the media that's put out there that schools are failing, that we have lots of bad teachers, that we can't compete in a global economy. So we've got these three things that are sort of pounding down on us all at once. And if I were to explain why, number one, we've got a testing industry that is making a lot of money. Number two, by privatizing schools, right? Mm-hmm. There's money to be made there by investing through vouchers. There's money to be made there, charter schools, tax breaks, for-profit schools. And then there's also control over the curriculum. You know, if you have a private school, you can eliminate science, you can eliminate ethnic studies. If there are books that you don't want kids to read, you can ban them. And then you're really looking at weakening and destroying teachers' unions when you're privatizing schools. So those are the big payoffs in the corporate education reform.
This is the corporate education agenda. And by privatization, you're talking about vouchers, taxpayer money, for students to go to private schools, and charter schools are private schools that contract with the public school system.
Exactly.
And you want to add to this?
Yeah, you know, I think that's an excellent analysis. And basically, I would say that boils down to class warfare. You know, if you think about who's behind the corporate agenda, there are the, you know, it's even beyond the 1%, right? It's the 0.01%. People who do not send their kids to public schools have such an interest, you know, whether we're talking about DeVos or Democrat-aligned people, in controlling public education for all those reasons. And, you know, I think there are so many things they get out of it, including really attacking unions more broadly. But one last thing I would just add to that is it's especially about, you know, they're going after urban education districts. And it's also very much connected to gentrification. And if we look at what's happened in Chicago, in New York, in places like that, you know, schools right now are as segregated as they were in 1968, mm-hmm. partly because neighborhoods are segregated, right? And so when we push this school choice, whether through charter schools or other forms of school choice, it allows for, it is what allows white families to gentrify and not send their kids to low-performing schools, quote-unquote, right? And they have the choice of sending their kids to a charter school or whatever other kind of school. And so it really is an aid to gentrification and property values that gentrification has. So there's so many different components that fit all into that that really work very well for the 0.01%.
Thank you. How has the election of Donald Trump and his new Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, impacted this corporate agenda, both for their side and our side?
Well, I think it's going to take some time for us to see that. And on the one hand, the federal government has a relatively small role in public education in the U.S. We mostly rely on the state and also in many places, really local property taxes.
They only fund about 10% of the school funding.
Yeah. And really, historically, the federal government, at least, you know, since Brown versus Education, has been kind of the check on local segregation and oppression of students. And I think we're going to see the federal government, and I mean, really, we've already been seeing the federal government play kind of the opposite role of that for a while, but I think that will intensify. And I think who's going to suffer the most are the most oppressed and the most underprivileged, because though poverty schools, high poverty schools and neighborhoods depend on more federal funding, everything from, you know, reduced school lunch that they're going to mess with to aid for special needs students, but also just, you know, high poverty students that without the federal funding to make up for the lack of local funds that wealthy school districts get from their high property tax values, it will really mean that poor children and families will suffer.
Do you want to add to that, Steve?
You know, if you're talking about Betsy DeVos, you just have to know a little bit about her background to know that she's bad news for public schools. If you look at her record and what's happened in Michigan and particularly in Detroit, it's not good. She's pushing for vouchers and charter schools, which are not performing any better, and in some cases they're performing worse. And you know, the other thing is that not only does she have an agenda that is concerning, but she's just really demonstrated her ignorance in terms of what goes on in schools and what are some of the basic important things to understand, like IDEA, which is all about special education and providing that for any student who needs it. And so to have somebody that doesn't understand something very basic about education be in charge of the Department of Education just shows that there's not really an interest in strengthening that department, right? The interest is in dismantling that department, like a lot of the other agencies and departments in the federal government.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and you know, there's just one thing I wanted to add about that. I didn't catch this until recently, that Jason Battelle, who is the founder of KIPP Schools and a graduate of Teach for America, has been appointed as White House advisor in education.
So maybe you could tell our listeners what Teach for America is and what KIPP schools are.
Yeah, so I mean, KIPP schools, I think we really saw that that was pushed, especially in Chicago, but also it's pushed in New York City and many other places. And basically, it's one of the models that Wall Street loves the most. Like most charter schools and Teach for America, there's a lot of interlocks between them. They push charter schools. They're privately run. And that means that they get to exclude students, right? Because they're all going for the test scores and the numbers, right? To show that how, you know, they're improving so much compared to public schools, they will exclude any student they don't think is going to, you know, achieve what they want to produce on paper.
And now this is KIPP schools. They're a for-profit charter chain.
I believe KIPP is a nonprofit.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And yeah, most charters are nonprofit. But as we know, with a lot of quote unquote nonprofits, you know, you have the people that run the schools make $500,000, unlike a principal at a regular school that, you know, maybe makes, you know, just over a six-figure salary, but and a lot of unaccountability. There have been some great studies in the last couple of years that have shown that charter schools have either performed at best like public schools, or more likely have vastly underperformed compared to public schools.
Can you explain what Teach for America is?
Yeah, so Teach for America was started by Wendy Kopp, and has been backed by especially Goldman Sachs and a lot of Wall Street bankers. And the idea is that it's been this cadre of producing these elite teachers who get basically, I don't know,
a few weeks.
A few weeks of training to become a teacher. And it's to show how, you know, it's basically a step in their resume building. And they usually do that, spend, you know, maybe a year teaching, and then they go off to work for Goldman Sachs or Wall Street. And they've especially recruited from elite schools like the Ivy Leagues and so on. And without any dedication to public schools in a sustainable way, pushing charters, education, quote unquote, education choice, and really attacking unions. I think we could look at both places like New Orleans, right, after Hurricane Katrina with the shock doctrine as a model for groups like Teach for America to just go and take over public school systems and neighborhoods and impose this privatized model.
And they're for profit?
And again, you know, I think even in regular public schools, there's so many opportunities for profit. So even if I think most of those schools were run by nonprofit charters, but when they contract with, you know, Pearson publishers and testing companies or computer companies to provide the personalized education and all those kind of things, there's so many opportunities for profiting, including, you know, contractors with no bid contracts that they usually do with these charter schools, and including seizing public real estate and property. Right, that becomes very valuable for real estate. And, you know, there are things built into that whole system with actually started by the Clintons called the New Markets Tax Credit, where it allows wealthy investors to basically get a discount. It's a 39% tax credit for investing in things like charter schools and real estate in neighborhoods that create jobs and so on. And related to that, too, is the EB-5 visa. So that if you're a foreign oligarch and you want to launder money and you invest in either real estate or a charter school more than $500,000, you get a visa. So, you know, even though we're building walls for immigrants who are escaping persecution, right, if you're an oligarch with money pushing charter schools or a corrupt politician or, you know, drug lord or whatever, you get to invest in charter schools or real estate development and get your, you know, visa and tax credit as well.
So with all this doom and gloom, let's talk a little bit about some of the fight back that's been happening around the country here in Portland, in Chicago, in Seattle, against this standardized testing, against these charter schools, against the racism, gentrification. Tell us about how this is playing. Some of these fights have been played out in Portland in recent years, or other places that you want to share with us, with our listeners. A little bit of fight back here. What can you tell us about?
Well, I mean, there have been some things that have been happening and really picked up in Chicago. Chicago Teachers Union is sort of held up as the model, I think, not only for teachers unions, but I think for unions in general in this country right now. They're doing a lot of great things. But I want to talk about something that's just come up recently out of Seattle. Seattle's another place where they've been doing some great things, fighting back against testing. But they just recently unanimously passed a resolution calling on state and national level teachers unions, and I believe other unions as well, to join in a one-day strike. And I think that this is an ingenious move because it is going to force the union leadership to take a very visible position, either in favor of militancy or of, you know, continuing to play the political games that, you know, that they play with the Democratic establishment that really have gotten us into this mess right now, right? I mean, this mm-hmm. is the reason that we have a Trump and his administration now, is because unions and other organizations and people, we've just been kind of playing the game, right, with the establishment. So it's very early on, so I can't talk about it much more than what I've
said. Do we have a date?
Do we have the dates for?
Date for the strike, the one-day strike?
Well, May Day is May 1st.
May 1st.
Yes.
Oh. Uh-huh. And the demands? Are there specific demands?
You know, I couldn't I don't know if Young has them readily available. I believe that a lot of it is just to as sort of a pushback on in general on what's coming out of the Trump administration right mm-hmm. now. I mean, certainly they are you know, attacking public sector.
So this is beyond just teachers. It's initiated by teachers, but it's reaching out to the larger working class.
I believe that's the hope. Uh-huh. Yes.
If you're just joining us, listeners, you're listening to KBOO in Portland. This is Labor Radio. We're talking about teachers and social justice unionism with Stephen Siegel of the Reynolds Education Association Social Justice Caucus and Hyung Nam from the Portland Association of Teachers Social Justice Committee.
So, Stephen, you're with the Social Justice Caucus of your union, and then, Young, you're with your Social Justice Committee. So mm-hmm. What's the difference between a caucus and a committee, and what are you guys up to?
You know, I don't know that there technically has to be a difference between the two. I think that maybe a committee might be more tasked with reporting back things to the representative council or something. Maybe Hyung could add to that. But as a caucus, maybe we have a little more autonomy to do some things.
Yeah, I'm not totally sure. But, you know, our committee basically reflects the committees that exist with the National Union, NEA, and also the State Union, OEA. And the Social Justice Committee, also our kind of sister committee that we overlap with, is I believe the Racial Justice or Racial Equality Committee. And both committees used to be part of the what was called the CNHR, so Civil and Human Rights Committee, that's on the national and state levels as well. So we just decided to change the names because I think naming social justice and racial equality or racial justice is more accurate in terms of, you know, what these committees are doing. And we also serve a bit as a external organizing committee. I mean, part of our task is to be aware of and involved in and make connections with broader organizing efforts, not just with other unions in Portland, but also other social justice organizations. So whether it's housing issues, healthcare issues, you name it, we make those connections and make sure that our teachers' union is not only aware of what's happening as far as other kinds of organizing and issues, but we find ways and we discuss ways that we can get involved and help those broader causes beyond just our you know, contract issues within our union.
So, can you tell us a little bit about, you were right before the program telling me about your committee getting involved with housing issues and how the connection between the housing crisis and the attempts to organize to push back the schools our students deserve.
Exactly. So at the last monthly meeting of our social justice committee, we spent pretty much the whole meeting talking about what was happening to our students at Normandy apartments and also Titan apartments, where they're either being threatened with evictions or such outrageous rent increases that it would lead to evictions and really being houseless, and who knows what else, right, given the climate right now. And so we spent the whole time understanding and brainstorming ways that we as a union could lend help to these organizing efforts of groups like PTU, the Portland Tenants Union, which, by the way, on the floor of our RA, what was it?
RA?
The Representative Assembly, which is the democratic body of our union, making up about 4,000 members that are represented. And with the building reps in the Representative Assembly, over a year ago, actually, it's a parent of one of the organizers of both Portland Solidarity Network and Portland Tenants United that introduced a resolution, and I amended the resolution for PAT not only to symbolically support this new organizing group, Portland Tenants United, which is a tenants union, like, you know, believing in unionism. And I actually amended it and people passed it to also donate. We were the first union to donate $500 to PTU and their organizing efforts. So we've already been, you know, talking about these kind of broader issues beyond the really important education issues and our contract issues in our union. But this committee gives us a specialized body for anyone who's a member and even people in the community to come talk to us. And the idea is that this committee can serve as a kind of a more efficient way of organizing so that when people want to bring those kind of issues to our union, instead of just taking it to the executive committee kind of on a hierarchical level, they bring it to us first. And we could either take it to, and I think we would maybe take it usually both to the broader representative body and to the executive board so that requests for community support for broader social justice causes can happen through us.
I just wanted to add my experience of last Saturday, which was amazing. Hundreds of people in the streets marching, rallying in support of the Normandy Apartments families who were facing this 100% rent increase, and it's almost entirely Latino parents and children. So many children in this apartment complex that if they had to leave, 5% of the student population of regular school would be gone. And the teachers were there. The regular teachers were there, and the students spoke about how this was a welcoming school, a school. Welcoming Latinos and a number of Spanish-speaking teachers, and the leadership of the Portland Association of Teachers was there, and of course the Portland Tenants United. It was a very amazing mixture of, you know, tenants issues, immigrant issues, and education issues, which are totally combined. I mean, as the vice president of your union, Elizabeth Thiel, said, how can we call ourselves a sanctuary city, protecting immigrants from the immigration, can't even have a safe home to live in, with these kinds of rent increases? Mm-hmm. So
you're so right, Jamie. And you know, housing is for everyone. Housing, you know, how are they going to get a good start at school ever? And every time, schools more than likely. And so, really, it's nice to see the teachers' union stepping up in this way.
Yes,
Stephen, would you like to talk about some of the things that your caucus is doing or thinking about?
Sure.
In the Reynolds School District.
Yeah. Well, we are very new. So
So thank you to our new our president and his administration for really firing a lot of people up and wanting to get engaged.
You mean the Donald?
The Donald.
Well, yeah, I prefer not to say his name, but thank you for that because, you know, I mean, there are people that have been, you know, fighting and interested in fighting for social justice, right, for a long time. And it's not like just with this new administration, you know, all of a sudden social justice is now an issue. It's been an issue, but I think it's been an awakening for some people, probably more likely people of privilege, that have been able to live fairly comfortably and maybe be annoyed, but be able to go about their business. And now I think some of those people are realizing, no, they can't just go about their business. They need to get involved. And so so the timing was great to start our Social Justice Caucus this year. And there's been a lot of energy around it. And that's really important because teachers work their you know what's off and they're tired. And so to show up at something and have a meeting, we have regular meetings, and then to plan to do other things on top of that takes some energy. It takes some enthusiasm, and we have that now. So, you know, we've done a few things, nothing that I would consider real huge. We did push for, one of the first things we did was we pushed for a resolution to be endorsed in our union. So we brought it to our representative assembly that it sort of centers our resistance against a lot of the things that the current administration is pushing. We put in a lot of effort to turn people out for the combined labor and women's marches that took place. And sure, you could say, well, some of those people were going to turn out anyways. And but we did our part to really get people there. And a lot of us marched together as a group with our banners. And that was pretty new for our union to do that. We are now starting to talk. We are going to be talking about that May Day strike, and I can't say for sure that we are going to be bringing it to our representative assembly until after we've made a decision as a caucus, but that's something that we're going to be talking about. And one other thing that we did, and we did not bring this one, we didn't really have time to bring it to our representative assembly, that was fun and exciting, was we did a combined walkout and rally on February 14th, on Valentine's Day. So the walkout, it wasn't in the sense that we walked out and left school in the middle of the school day, but we walked out with our students, and our signs, a lot of our signs said that we love all of our students and families, with an emphasis on the all. And then afterwards, some of us rallied at the East Multnomah County Courthouse. The turnout was fairly small, but there was a lot of energy. The speeches were really powerful and heartfelt, and we also got some local press. So I think that, you know, even though these things are starting out small, that we're getting the word out that we are here, we are action-oriented, and there are a lot of teachers that are pretty interested and engaged.
All right. Well, we're running out of time, but I wanted to give Young an opportunity to talk about the school board races that are coming up. If you could say just a few words about some of the concerns you had we talked about earlier.
Yeah. So there are several school board races, but the one race that's going to be the race to watch out for is the race for Steve Buell's old seat. And right now we have two candidates we know that are running. And one is Jamila Singleton Munson, who's an African-American woman that grew up in Portland, went to school in Portland, but for the last several years, she's been working for KIPP schools and also for Teach for America, not just as a teacher, but as a, you know, on a high up level. So she's running against Rita Moore, who's a parent activist, that's been, you know, involved with things like groups like the Oregon Save Our Schools, one of our major allies for defending public education here in the state. And this is going to be a race to look out for because Singleton Munson will be getting lots of out-of-state support from corporate groups that She's connected to, like, Teach for America Network, Stand for Children, the other major corporate group based in Portland, right, that has really been one of the major groups attacking Chicago teachers, as you know.
Okay, well, I'm sorry to cut you off, Young, but we are running out of time. I'd just like to give you both an opportunity to give our listeners any contact information or ways that they can get in touch with you or the struggles that you're involved with to be in, you know, keep either get involved or learn more. Are there websites or Facebook pages?
We do have a Facebook page. If you would just search for Reynolds Community Social Justice, you would find it. Yeah, and if you want to email me, it's stevensiegel333@yahoo.com.
And for the Portland Teachers website, I think it's portlandteachers.org. And if you look through the committees, you will find the Social Justice Committee.
All right. Thank you, Young Nam of the Portland Association of Teachers Social Justice Committee and Stephen Siegel, Reynolds Education Association Social Justice Caucus. This has been Labor Radio. I'm Jamie Partridge, my co-host Amanda Hill, and our engineer Danielle Parks. Thanks, Danielle. And tune in next Monday and every Monday for Labor Radio.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Outside the Frame film screening, The Lost Boys of Portlandia. This screening takes place Wednesday, March 1st at 7 p.m. at Hurava Shalom, Portland. The Lost Boys of Portlandia is a film where homeless youth in Portland, Oregon debate if and how to return to mainstream society while creating their own film version.